is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing. And for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book, coming to you from Tantalk Radio Network studio here in glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. Oh boy, oh boy, do I have a wonderful day today. I have three guests in the studio. This is so exciting. And then at the bottom of the hour, we're going to be talking to someone who's written a book about loyalty. And this is always so important. It's an important subject, and so I'm looking forward to talking to him. But I'm going to keep my guests here in the studio with me, and they are. We'll start with actually Bria Burton, because Bria has been here many times. I absolutely adore her. She wrote one of the most touching books I've ever read. It is such a beautiful book, and it's called Little Angel Helper. And I love that book. It is just a heartwarming book, and it won a Royal Palm Literary Award. Hi, Bria.
Hi, Patsy. Thank you so much for having me back.
Okay. And of course, your most recent accomplishment. My goodness, you're a woman of so many talents. Oh, by the way, she's a runner. She actually runs really fast. She knows what she's doing. But you have really made a big mark in winning a very, very prestigious award, the Silver Medal. In what?
Another Royal Palm Literary Award. So this was at the Florida Writers Association banquet just this October, so about a little less than a month ago. And it was a story called Her Midnight Ride.
Which is a wonderful, wonderful story. Bria is, as a sci-fi writer, she just loves to get into her subjects. She's part of this whole Prometheus saga and the anthologies that they put together. Tell us. Just in a minute, you're going to tell us a little bit about it, but I want to introduce also in the studio with me is Kate Brunson. Kate has written, talking about sci-fi, I mean, this is major sci-fi. Clone Droid is so good. When I got the book, and I was supposed to, I had been away to BoucherCon, and I laundry and everything's piling up, and I was supposed to do some housework, and then she drops the book by the studio, and well, that was the rest of the afternoon. I just had to sit down and read it, and it is so wonderful, and I'm so happy that you are here in the studio with me, Kate.
Thank you. Well, thank you for having me here.
Okay, and well, we had to bring in because the cover is so intriguing. It's really done beautifully, and so we brought in your cover artist, yeah. Deb Von Cannon, and she does cover art, so it's just beautiful.
Thank you, Patsy. It's a pleasure meeting you.
Okay, well, we're going to talk about everything, and as I said, at the bottom of the hour, we'll add an extra little spice to our day. But going back to Bria, you know, when I first started reading, I've been reading sci-fi ever since I was a kid. I loved Isaac Asimov, which is why I like, you know, both of your writing. But when I started reading yours, what I found was so charming, really, about your writing is that the way that you pull us into your stories, and just the humanness of your sci-fi. You know,
That's
something special.
I think that was one of the goals as well. The group of authors that collaborate together were called the Alvarium Experiment. And Charles A. Cornell, who was here in the past, and Ken Pelham initially came up with the idea to start this anthology with the premise of an alien probe gets sent to Earth. The probe can morph into any human form, male, female, any race. And this probe essentially observes humanity through the history that we know. It's not alternate history. We're not rewriting history. So that was also part of, you know, we have essentially a very historical fiction with oftentimes real historical figures that appear in a lot of these stories. So that was the start of the Prometheus saga, which the first volume came out, I want to say in 2015, and now the Prometheus saga 2 has been out for about a year, and that was the story that just won that award, was featured in the Prometheus saga 2. And so what we did was selected different historical time periods. I chose the American Revolution, And American history is one of my favorite subjects.
So mine too. I just love everything around that period.
Yeah, it was just such a ball to do all this research and get back into some of those, just what was happening in that time. So I had the first story on both sides, which appeared in the first Prometheus saga. And then when the Prometheus saga 2 was coming, I went, it's a no-brainer. I'm going to continue the story. For whatever reason, none of the other authors did. They went, I want a new time period. And I, because you think about it, there's a lot of history that we could write about. So everybody was able to pick a different historical time period. We just made sure we didn't overlap. We wanted to have some continuity, even though we didn't know each other's stories as we were writing. But that way, the reader can read and not go, well, wait a minute, this character showed up in this other story and it was conflicting with this time period, but we make sure all the time periods are accounted for. So that's how we kind of keep it straight. So I said, I'm sticking with the American Revolution. So I discovered this story about Sybil Ludington, who is essentially known as a female Paul Revere, and yet her story is not that well known. And one of the reasons I think it could be possible that we didn't learn about her in American history class is because it wasn't until one of her great nephews wrote down the oral tradition that was passed down about her life. He was the first to document it. So it's possible that the historian said, okay, this started as word of mouth. Now, granted, people in the surrounding area in New York where she was from, it seems like they know her story. They have a statue in Carmel, and it's her on her horse, Star. So the Daughters of the Revolution there keep her memory alive. So she's becoming more well-known, which is wonderful.
Yeah, partly because of your work. I think it's absolutely great.
That's one of the reasons I wanted to write about her, because I went, ooh, I didn't even know about her when I wrote the first American Revolution story. And then when we got to Prometheus 2, I found out about her, and I went, okay, she's going to appear for sure. And she ended up being the main character in this story. And then yeah, I had so much fun just finding out what was known about her. Some of it is a little sketchy, so I went, okay, it is historical fiction. So
you're making that up.
I'm going to take some liberties where
sometimes the character possesses you, too, and
exactly
leads you exactly where you need to go.
And you just try to put yourself in that person's shoes of, okay, what, you know, it was thought that she rode through the night 40 miles in a thunderstorm, possibly fought off a highwayman with a stick. So I'm just going, oh, put myself in this young woman's shoes. She's 16 years old. That was known, that she was pretty young, and yet she, you know, managed to accomplish this task. The city of Danbury had been burning because the British came through. They were burning the military storehouses. Her father was a colonel and had a local regiment. They were all off planting for the farming season, so she had to round up the troops while her father prepared them at their farm. So her story to me is just so incredible. And then yeah, just being able to draw in our premise of, now we've got this observer character who's watching her, and it's this alien probe. So that's where that little sci-fi twist comes in, where it's very much a human story, and that's true of all the stories in these, and yet we've got this observer watching us and how that character interacts.
Well, I think by introducing the sci-fi aspect, many people will say, I don't want to read history, but boy, oh boy, that little bit of twist, because you start imagining what it would be like.
Yes.
And
yeah,
and it sort of opens your mind. I think it's a great, absolutely fantastic way to learn history.
Oh, yes.
And to encourage people. You know, people are sort of vague about, well, you know, people are, let's just say, some young people at university cannot put World War I and World War II in order. I mean, you ask them the dates of World War I and World War II. Oh, and I mean, they will have the wrong dates. They'll put World War I after World War II, and you're like, what? What?
Well, you're right. This is a wonderful way to draw attention to history while potentially bringing in a new group of people who might find that they have a love for history. Maybe they just didn't know it.
Exactly.
And so that's something that I'm really proud to be part of this, and especially to give awareness to Sybil's story, too.
Well,
and I have a quick side note. When I won this award for this story, it was the published novelette category. At the conference, it's a banquet style, so everybody's eating dinner, and then they announce the awards. And so I was called for the Silver Award, and they do the little log line, which was something like, you know, Sybil Ludington does A Midnight Ride, blah, blah, blah. And so I'm in my little happy place, walking off the stage, just elated that I won this medal. And this woman walks up to me, and I'm thinking, oh, I haven't met her here at the conference. I don't know who this woman is walking up to me, but I don't care. I'm so happy. She's probably just going to shake my hand. And she did, and she said, I am a direct descendant of Sybil Ludington's father.
Oh.
And I just went, oh my goodness, I need to talk to you. So we of course had to go our separate ways at that moment, but I found her later. We exchanged business cards. So I do intend to continue Sybil's story in the next installment. So I will be certainly...
Eventually we'll have the entire book.
Right, yeah. I think I'll probably end up with a book out of just these stories that I'm collecting here. So I'm looking forward to talking to her about what her growing up being part of this history and what that meant.
I think your stories are wonderful. And I do hope, as I said, I hope that you market them. You know, there are lots of adult sci-fi readers, but I hope you also try to target that teenager and that
yes.
a college student. The nice thing, college students do like to read short things.
Yes, that's what's
which
great.
Which is very true. Yeah. My son, you know, is up at University of Wisconsin in Madison. He's a biomedical engineer student. He's going to have his PhD this year.
Exciting.
It is very exciting. But he is so busy. I mean, unbelievable, his schedule. But he loves to read, you know, take like short little breaks to read.
Little snack sized, yes. Yes.
And yeah. So I hope that you market it to them because it is exactly that. Sometimes people don't realize how much fun history is.
Oh, my goodness,
isn't
yes.
It's so much fun to go back in time and to learn about these things. So I think you...
And Kate and I were just at the Tampa Bay Times Festival of Reading, which was down at the USF St. Pete campus, just this last Saturday. And it was incredible how many young people were there. I was so encouraged just seeing so many young readers. And I was able to sell several of these to some college age. And I explained it is historical, but it's got that great sci-fi element. And they seemed very interested.
Well, particularly, you know, young women in college need to know more about important women in our history. And
exactly.
So it's fantastic. Yeah. And talking about Kate, wow. What can I say about this book? It is called Clone... Now, that's... I'm sorry.
Clone it's a tongue twister.
Droid. Clone Droid.
Clone Droid.
And it's Clone Droid, The New Wave.
That's right.
And by Kate Bronson. And it's... I've already marked up all the pages because it is... You are is this your first book, really?
This,
first novel?
This is my first science fiction novel, my first fiction novel. Uh-huh. I've written a lot of short stories and nonfiction.
Because this is tremendous.
Thank you.
Really tremendous. It borders on, you know, that there's a different types of sci-fi, but this is really sort of heavy-duty sci-fi because you have everything in there for the people like me who just loved details.
Thank you.
And yet, it's also, well, how can I say? It's a clone, but it's very human.
It has that touch of medical drama.
Yeah,
which
exactly.
Bria pointed out.
Exactly.
I was one of her first readers, and I was just so enthralled in that book.
Yeah, the kind of thing Robin Cook has in his books. He always has this medical side, and I love books like that. And, of course, as I was mentioning to you before, I worked in a lab, and so... when I got to the part about the complete blood count, I can't give everything away here, but let's explain who your character is. We meet him as Abe, but he is a prototype, 2112, and wow.
Yep. He's a cloned human. This is at the end of this century. This is in the near future, and... the research that I did on this, it's evolved over 8 years, and I had to really work hard to stay ahead of the curve on where things are going with technology and with medical science in brain mapping the brain and trying to create an actual, not just an AI brain, but take the human brain and grow it or create something like this. So with Abe, he's a cloned human, but he has an android's brain. And that's how Mac, which is the company that has designed him, gets around a legal issue of creating donor parts for human beings that need for transplant patients that are waiting for them. And it's a very lucrative thing in the future because everyone wants to live longer and you can wear out your body parts and you don't have to treat yourself well if you're going to be able to turn around and buy all the parts to replace them. So they've come up with this great idea of creating a clone droid, and they can use them for anything that they want to because they're enhanced humans, and they can even put them on ice and send them out into space and have them ready for anyone that needs them that's colonizing Mars or so on and so forth. So that was the idea, but because he's so human and he has sentience, it has an implication, that ethical implication of, are we taking things too far? Are we playing God with something that we shouldn't be? And what do you do when you have a sentient being and you're going to use him for, you know, put it, you know, chop him up and use him for body parts or any other purpose, you know, whether you weaponize them, whatever you do with them. And so with Abe being a prototype, his team that created him has this bond with him, but the higher up the chain, you have corporate heads that want to use him for his purpose, which is to make money. And so then you have the dynamic of Abe himself, who is, because of his computerized brain or android brain, he's just that much smarter, you know. And that's the thing, when you build something smarter than us, there's a problem. He's smarter than us. So it creates that situation where he can now take control of his own fate as well. So you have a countdown between himself and his fate and what his fate will be.
Wow. And this is a thriller. This book is a real thriller because you don't know what's going to happen. It's very exciting. Your style of writing is excellent. And as I said, I love all of the technical part. You weave it in so beautifully so that it's very easy for anyone to read it, but you learn a lot as you're going along because, as you said, you put hours and hours of research into this.
I did, and it was a real task to stay ahead of it because, like I said, I started researching a while back when I started writing the story, and then I shelved it to pursue other projects. And then when I went back into actually finishing the book, which was just a couple of years ago, things had changed so much and advanced so much. I think 2011 was like a huge shift in technology, and things just took off like a shot. And things have just ramped up that much exponentially in the medical field and medical science and technology and artificial intelligence. So everything I'd learned before, I had to kind of relearn and readapt the character and the situation between the characters.
Well, because even in 8 years, I think there's a bigger understanding of the neurons of the brain.
Yes, exactly.
When I went up to see my son at university, and he works on a cellular level. Yeah. I mean, he works on not big people. I mean, he's so tiny. It's cell, and he has a microscope that, I mean, cost a fortune, mm-hmm. you know, so that they can go down and actually manipulate inside a cell.
Gene editing,
We never thought, I mean, 40 years ago, nobody thought this would be possible. And now it's an everyday thing. And for him, I'm inside the cell. I can do that. Yeah. Oh, wow.
Yeah, they have CRISPR technology, Cas9. They're using all these different technologies now where they can go in. I believe it's a virus that goes in and actually cuts through the DNA, and then they can add in new strands. Like they're doing the gene editing that science fiction movies were talking about 10 years ago or 20 years ago, and they're actually doing it now.
And so this is really exciting, and because, I mean, Abe is a character. I mean, we forget. I mean, he's a person. he takes on this. We're as interested in him as we would be in any character. And your writing is so good that you take us to the places. I felt like I was in the lab. There's a clock involved, time ticking down in the beginning. And I'm like, I'm waiting for the countdown. And so it was really great. And, you know, I looked at the book and I thought, wow, you know, wasn't sure what it was until I started. And then I did notice that, I saw something nice here that really, computer numbers. which is, of course, where you got. Tell us, about the design of the book cover, because this is really fascinating.
Well, I had an idea for it, uh-huh. and I needed someone to do it, because as much as I can create in my brain, I'm not that great when it comes to designing a cover. So I ended up actually, one of my critique writers, Martin Von Cannon, his wife just started up, Deb just started up, I'll let her tell you about it. But she designed the cover for me. She started out designing covers and wanted to, you know, get a writer to design covers for them. And she, you know, offered to do mine. So I said, well, sure, here's an idea. This is what I wanted. And I'll let her tell you a little bit more about it.
Let's hear about it. Okay. So Deb Von Cannon. I love that name. It's a cool name.
Thank you. Everybody loves it. It's my husband.
Okay. So, Deb, you just started this business recently, or you've been doing
2018.
Yeah.
One of our children moved out, grew up and moved out, and renovated the room and made an art studio at home after a long time of wanting to own one. And here I am. I'm in business doing book covers. It's fun.
Well, it is exciting, and book covers are so important. Yeah. You know, for authors today, there's such a it's such a business decision that you have to make on everything, because you have to be out there, you have to be promoting your book, and having a good book cover is right there on the very top of the list whenever an author is thinking about, you know, getting out there, because that's what they see, and I think they did a study, like, you have 3 seconds to catch the eye of a buyer. And so this one, which is very dramatic, and talking about catching the eye, we do. It's really great. So did you have fun designing this?
I did, actually. I came upon Kate and her book because my husband goes to the FWA meetings at the local library, and he came home one day and he's like, hey, Deb, I met a bunch of people that are writing books and they have a story. And I was like, okay, that's nice. And he's like, but they can't finish the book because they don't have a cover. And I was like, all right, what are you trying to say? And he's like, you're a designer. Why don't you start doing book covers? And so I thought about it, and he gave me Kate's name, and we started a chat, and there we have a book cover. We did it all by email, pretty much, and exchanged what her ideas for the book were and set a couple drafts together. And changed up a few things, and then we decided on this cover for Clone Droid, and it was pretty cool. It's a really fun project to try to match a cover to someone's storyline. And oddly enough, I did not get to read the story before doing the book cover, my very first book cover. I had no idea what the story was. So that was a very difficult task, but Kate knew what she wanted and was really solid with her ideas, so that helped me out on the designing side.
Uh-huh.
And the color schemes, and it was a really nice project. Thank you for that.
So the name of the company is Urban Artist, right?
Urban Artist Florida Studio.
Okay, Urban Artist Florida Studio, and people can find you.
I have a website. It's urbanartistflorida.com, and we live in Kenwood, which is the urban part of St. Pete.
Uh-huh.
So that's how I got the Urban Artist, and I'm in Florida, so I just tied it all together. It's a little bit of a lengthy name, but I like it.
Yeah, once people know it, they'll remember it. And the important thing is that most of this type of work, as you said, is done over the internet. And I hope that people can contact you, and they can meet if they're in the area and sit down with you and explain what they want, or you can do it over the internet. I think it's a wonderful business. It's an important business, because your choice, your decision on the cover can change. And I was just at BoucherCon, and I was talking to people there, and so many of them, were very happy with their covers, but then some were now unhappy. They realized that they didn't hit the right spot. They didn't grab interest. And so it's also a fun job, isn't it?
It is. It's something I really try to focus on is whether the author is looking for production design or actual design, because I can either do your job where you're deciding all the elements, you know what you want, you just don't own the tools to do it, or I can come in with my art degree and fully design everything from the bottom up.
Uh-huh.
So at that point, I would need to know a lot about your book, and if I'm doing just the production side, you tell me what you're looking for, and I hook you up with what you need. I have the full studio of all the design tools, and can do digital or print books, so it just depends what you need.
Well, I'm going to have to take a commercial break. And when I come back, we're going to talk again some more about your company and to Kate and to Bria about their wonderful books. And so just a few minutes, we'll be right back. Okay?
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more recording careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida, can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
How many of you listening today yearn to write stories, poems, or novels? Each of you has a story to tell, or knows of a story that others would love to read if only you could put the words on a page. The many writers' clubs in the Bay Area understand this urge and would welcome any new writer to learn with them. So go ahead and take the first step to becoming a well-known author. Sponsored by the Pinellas Writers Club.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z, and I am back with my guests in the studio, and it's so wonderful. I love to have the studio full of people, and I have with me two authors and a designer, and this is so important today in today's marketing world. The book cover designer is a valuable, valuable person, so I'm really happy to have in the studio with me Deb Von Cannon, I like that name, Bria Burton, award-winning author, and of course, I'm so happy that, you know, as I said, I love sci-fi, and so I got this book. It took a half a day for me to read it because I had to ignore everything else, and it's Kate Bronson's first sci-fi novel, Clone mm-hmm. Droid, and I'm so happy that she's here. So, hi, girls.
Hello.
Oh,
hello.
Can I say girls? Oh, I know. Hi, gals. Hi, ladies. Hi, whatever. We have to be. But I'm waiting. I'm waiting for a call. Okay. I'm waiting for a call in from Raghu Kale, and we're going to be talking to him about his new book called Loyalty and Sacrifice, Ushering New Horizons for Business Leaders in the Digital Age. And so I think this will be a interesting story. Hi, Raghu, are you there?
Hi, yes, Joy, how about you?
Okay, did I pronounce your name right?
Yes, Raghu is the way to say.
Okay, and your last name is Kale? Is that Kali or should it, which is it?
No, Kali.
Kali, that's what I thought. Okay.
Kali, yes.
Well,
Kali.
I'm so happy to welcome you to Joy on Paper, and I have in the studio with me, I'm been talking for my first half hour, I've been talking to two authors, and they write sci-fi books. And so your book on loyalty and sacrifice, tell us about it. How does it relate to people today, in both in the business world, and what could, for example, what could writers get out of it? They're always looking for loyalty from the readers, and it's a subject, right, girl?
Yes.
Okay. So it's a subject that we're interested in.
It's a fascinating subject. If there are human beings involved, there will always be loyalty. So in any endeavor, whether it is military, whether it is government, whether it is businesses, schools, families, if there are, it's a celebration of human behavior in some way, in many ways. And I've been thinking of this for over a decade and finally got myself to put it out as a book, as a concept. And there are many takers saying that this is timely, it's going to help because digital world is now able to use these new philosophies and the new philosophy of way of looking at things. So here's the thing. Sacrifice is hidden in plain sight when it comes to loyalty. And that, I think, you will know from your loyalty to your family, your spouse, your clan, your brand, your nation, your country, your purpose, the cause. And it's not always very much visible. It is always silent. And that's the first thing I could dive into and define what are the four axioms of loyalty. Where is it coming from? And having defined those four axioms, I saw how it can be applied in business situations. And I realized that sacrifice is taking shape and place for millennia. It's been happening all along. And so I wrote this book. And the applications are anywhere and everywhere, and it's a unified definition. You can't have a different definition for customers and say that only if there's a repeat purchase we'll recognize them as customers. And we just had the Veterans Day. We look at war heroes and you say that they sacrificed their life. So where's the sacrifice for customers? When I ask the question, are customers capable of sacrifice? The straight answer is no, they are bargain hunters, they're not supposed to sacrifice. Then why do you use the word loyalty for customers? The fact is customers are loyal and customers do sacrifice, but marketers have turned a blind eye to that. And for 200 years, loyalty programs are hovering around enticing customers to come back for more. And therefore, I think one part of the book shines a light on what is what probably needs to be corrected, in a sense, if you are a business and you have customers and you care about those customers to build relationships, then I think you can look into this book and say that, can I take something away from here and adopt a new philosophy, a new way of looking at it? And here's the book on these lines. So it's a unified definition of loyalty. And sacrifice is very much embedded in it. There are four principles, four axioms, and then it leads into, and it's supported by almost 30 or more accounts of real life incidents. So it shows you that it's happening, it's there, but we are somehow oblivious to it in a way.
Well, how do you build loyalty? For authors, for people who write books, loyalty and having people come back time after time, year after year, and buy your books is so valuable and so important.
Yeah, very true. In fact, one question I had asked one of my seniors who's on the board of various companies, got knighted by the Queen for all the work that he has done for the steel industry. A boss who leads with a heart. And I asked him, he had a strap line for the group saying, for the company, leadership with trust. The idea was that we have to be leading in the areas of businesses and build trust with the customers. So I asked him a simple question at a personal human level. I said, Doc, how do you build trust? Now, we were having dinner and I just asked him that question. And he said, Raghu, I don't know how I can build trust, but one thing I know. If I say something, I better do it. And I don't promise what I don't do. So I can build credibility. That's all I can influence. Trust, I cannot. Trust in an outcome. So a parallel holds to that. If you're genuine to your cause and you believe in what you're saying and it resonates, if you're creating value, in a sense, for the readers, and it resonates with them, I don't see why they will not come back to you. One of the axioms in my book I have explained is the axiom of futility, which is the fourth axiom of loyalty. Strong men across millennia have always demanded loyalty of their people who are in their clan, so to speak. And we see that unfolding every day, even, you know, authoritarian regimes and what have you. And, you know, you see that they always demand loyalty, and it doesn't fall always in the right place. And I believe that loyalty can only happen when there is a convergence of your vision and values, and they buy into your vision, and they are aligned with the value set that you are propelling, in a sense. Unless there's a convergence of these two things, loyalty will not be the outcome. And demanding loyalty is the axiom of futility. And when you demand customers to come back because you will give them some freebies here and there, and just because they've come back for the freebies doesn't mean that they are really loyal, because then they are not. And so, to your question, how do authors, writers, build loyalty? I think if their propositions resonate with the readers and they see value in what they see, I don't see why they will not come back. You are, in fact, building your own brand, in a sense. That's no difference from building a brand, right? As an author's name, I guess.
Exactly.
Yes. At some level, yeah, it does, I think.
Yeah, well, I have on the program Bria Burton and Kate Bronson, and
hello.
They are both,
hello.
As I said, they're both writers who have really worked hard on developing their books, and now that's what they're interested in, is expanding and ensuring that your fans.
I think they are genuine to the cause, and whatever they are putting out resonates with people, and they will have their fan following, and people will join their bandwagon, in a sense, I guess.
Now, what about sacrifice? Where does sacrifice come in into the loyalty part of your book? What do you mean by sacrifice from somebody who is following a particular brand?
You see, I'll give you, there's a, from the very harsh reality of giving one's life, that is the self-sacrifice, as Woodrow Wilson has said it in a very famous quote of his, where it is very clearly. And there's a milder form of accommodating, adjusting, taking care of, you know, I'll forego and do something. So there's a trajectory of sacrifice. It can be harsher to the milder form, but that trajectory exists. For example, when you launch, I don't think it's happening anymore, but when iPhone was launched, I think many years, iPhone, first one, second, third, people were queuing up through the night, waiting for the stores to open. What is their sacrifice? They are waiting in the queue. They are waiting for the store to open. They pay the money. They buy the phone. So it is their sacrifice, in a sense, that they want to go that extra mile. Not that they're going to get any extra brownie points for that. And marketers would agree or not agree. They might, in hindsight, say that, but they're getting their money's worth. But did you contract that? Did you think that when you were putting that price, you said that we don't mind people are going to stand in the queue for, you know, 4 hours outside, 5 hours outside in the cold winter day? You know, so hindsight, you might. But actually, it's not. There is a sacrifice which is taking shape. There are multiple stories that I have found where there was a person who was buying $1 noodles just to save up the money to be able to buy the favorite brand of shoes.
Yes.
But those stories are there. So it's happening. There is another story where this wood trimmer, he's mortgaged his home, lost his divorced his wife, but he didn't let go of the favorite product that he has bought. So silent sacrifice is on the other extreme. In wherever there's human behavior, human connect, there will be all these things happening all the time. And these are extreme cases, but they highlight the point. They shine a light on the fact that human behavior, whether you're the attachment to a brand or your clan or your family, you will make adjustments. You will do that. And there are stories about how employees have gone beyond the call of duty not because they're going to get the best employee of the month. They hardly they care about it. It doesn't even cross their minds, but they're doing the right thing. And stories of our veterans and war heroes and what have you. And the common definition connects all the dots and says that whether it is a customer aligning themselves, whether or not the marketers have figured out the right definition for it, they have a skewed definition of repeat purchase as the surrogate measure for measuring loyalty, which is a very, I mean, in this day and age, as you go, if you were to really build loyalty with customers, you better look at a new definition of what it can bring to the table.
Well, you know, mm-hmm. For authors, I think they all have to hope that everyone will eat ramen noodles and save up their money to buy buy books.
Oh my God! But those shades exist. I mean, there are so many fascinating examples in the book. You know, it's such a funny thing that since you asked me, I'm blanking out in a way. Yes, there are many stories there. I'm trying to.
It's fascinating what you sort of honed in on, this idea of loyalty and sacrifice, and are customers capable of sacrifice in the digital marketing environment? So, you know, that's fascinating. And your book, which, you know, I think for people who are interested in understanding the marketplace today, and it is, mm-hmm. it is complex and it's difficult, but there are so many opportunities out there to build a business and to create partly, you know, in business, it's partly creating that buzz. And as you say, creating a loyalty a following that's really loyal to your brand. And I think...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And what?
Yes, I think I have bounced this concept over the last couple of years with some of my senior people who have been managing companies and on boards and CEOs of various companies, and they see value in this in a sense that you can adopt this new philosophy, a new way of thinking to this. In fact, the foreword to my book is written by Ratan N. Tata, who's the emeritus chairman of the Tata Sons, which is like the company which operates in over 100 countries and have over 500,000 employees. I think I lost count there, 800 or 700,000 people.
Yes, no, I moved. Mr. Tata is very impressive, and it was, you know, exactly that he found.
And yeah, and what I was about to say that he kind of understood the concept, and he says new age businesses can no longer look at old definitions, and they need to embrace the new definition. So for him to understand, absorb, and say that is a great testament to the fact that moving forward, one should at least have a conversation of this new philosophy. So he has kind of got it. He's kind of understood and endorsed it. And the second person who endorsed this concept is Dr. Edward De Bono, who's the father of lateral thinking. Six thinking hats and what have you. He's the one who has created this and changed the trajectory of human progress in a certain way in the last 25 years.
Okay.
So he's done the preface to the book, and he also found that this new definition, why blind spots occur, and that's one question I struggled with the whole concept of why is it that you have different definitions for the same human behavior of loyalty for war veterans and employees separately and customers separately. Why is the blind spot taking shape? Now, and I've addressed that in another chapter in the book, talking about why those blind spots happen and this latency factor.
Yeah. Okay, and the name of the book is Loyalty and Sacrifice, Ushering New Horizons for Business Leaders in the Digital Age. Do you have a website you want people to go to?
Yes, they can go to Amazon and buy the book right away, and on Apple and buy the book right away.
Okay.
And my own website is striking-ideas.com.
What was it again?
Striking Ideas, with a hyphen in the middle,
okay.
strikingideas.com.
Strikingideas.com. Well, it's a fascinating book, and one that, you know, everybody now, both writers are, it's now a business for writers and in the business world, and I want to thank you so much Raghu Kale for being on the program today. And
thank you.
I really appreciate it. And I think we've learned some interesting things, because we really do, as particularly for writers, they need to build that loyalty. So thank you again for being on Joy.
I'm happy to come back for more.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Okay,
thank
I will be in contact. Thank you so much, Doug.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, well, tell everyone out there, eat ramen noodles, save up, and buy Bria Burton's book, buy Kate Brunson's book, and, right?
Yeah, well, he had some really great points about, I mean, the first word that I kind of hung on that he said was relationships, and then he went on to describe what his book talks about with the loyalty and sacrifice, and he's right. I mean, in every aspect of our lives, things are evolving so fast, mm-hmm. in business, in publishing, in even homemaking. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm a mom of an almost 2-year-old, and so it's really, sometimes when we talk about writing, it's hard to keep up with what's happening because the technology, I mean, talk about yeah. Kate's book.
Yeah.
She was having trouble keeping up with the yeah. technology as she's researching her book. And then the publishing landscape is very much similar yeah. with the way technology advances so fast that it's hard to keep up. And being just recently at the Florida Writers Association conference, Deb was there as a volunteer and I was there as a faculty member. That was one of the prime subjects that people wanted to talk about was, you know, what do I need to be aware of now? Because I'm sure there's 10 things that I don't even know that are going on in publishing that I need to be aware of, the technology advances, and how can I do this with my self-publishing or with an agent? And so he really honed in on that, you know, being aware of the evolution of, okay, in his book, the business aspect of, you know, keeping up with the new methods and the models. And at the same time, as an author, how we have to do a similar thing, because essentially we do need to look at our books as a business, and yet not lose that relationship side. I keep going back to what he said about relationship, because that is what builds the loyalty, isn't it?
It is.
It's that, you know, Kate and I were at a booth where we're in person. We're not on social media. I mean, we are on social media, but we're at a booth at the Tampa Bay Times Festival of Reading, shaking hands with people and saying, hi, I'm an author. Here's my book. Do you want me to tell you about it? And so many people want to talk books. They
yes.
want to interact.
Yes.
And so much with technology, we lose that in social media. We lose that human touch. And again, I go back to your book, Kate. Oh, my gosh. Please read it if you haven't, because it really harkens to that
the changing
dilemma
dynamic.
That yeah. we have with this great thing that technology is, and yet it has its downsides.
Yeah.
So I really yeah. appreciated yeah. that he got on yeah. and was sharing his
yeah.
expertise
well,
with us.
He's fascinating. And as I said, because you never think of it in terms of, do people sacrifice? I mean, will they save their money to buy a book?
Will they get out of their house
yeah,
and walk
yeah.
to a book fair? Like,
yeah,
you know,
exactly.
even that, I hadn't thought of it in those terms, so it was really interesting.
So I think that is fascinating.
To hear him explain that. He seems to have a very analytical mind, which I can appreciate someone with a different kind of mind than me.
Yeah, he's very
explain
analytical.
Those things.
He would relate very, very well to Abe, the character.
And the one thing that I really liked about what he was touching on was the that loyalty that writers or readers have to specific, not just to specific writers, but to specific genres. And with science fiction, I found over time it has changed so much that, and splintered into so many subgroups that
yes,
it's incredible.
Yeah. Like the
and,
science fiction right. you're writing is not the same
no.
as what I'm writing, but
and
they're both under the science fiction umbrella.
Exactly. And with my book, with Clone Droid, The New Wave, I tried to, when I grew up, I loved reading Asimov and Crichton and stuff that really delves into it has a social commentary, it delves into the medical drama, it delves into a lot deeper subjects, you know, a lot more in deeper subjects than some science fiction where it's just out in space and they're shooting at each other, and that's fun. It's fun to read, but I also like something, you know, with that medical background.
Yeah, exactly.
Something that kind of challenges you. And that's something that has kind of in time slipped away, I have found, because I find myself going back to reading Crichton and going back to reading Asimov. And I kind of wanted to create something that's along that line. And I found that there is a reader loyalty and a reader followership following for that sort of thing. And I kind of wanted to go back and give those loyal readers that book, that style of writing, well, more classic. Sci-fi.
It is classic or hard sci-fi. What I call hard sci-fi. And it is a wonderful book. It's called Clone Droid, and it's the new wave. It's the first of what I have a feeling is going to be a wonderful series, because once we got to know Abe and the characters around Abe, we're ready for more. Forget the laundry. I want another book. I assume you're working on it.
And that's a sacrifice that you made.
Exactly.
I didn't think of it in that term. Yes. And my husband also sacrificed because I didn't cook dinner. He ate leftovers. So even he sacrificed. We had sacrifices for Kate Brunson.
Well, I started Clone Droid, the next wave, but it is a very intense thing to write, and a lot of research, and it's going to take time.
This is not one of these where you can do it in 6 months. I don't think so.
So I've shelved it for a little while, and I'm working on some nonfiction right now, some dog books and
other things. Okay, well, I don't know. I called you girls. I can call you ladies. I don't know. People, aliens, I don't know where you come from. Who knows? You could be.
Well, I mean, that's the whole premise. Saga, you know, poses the question, is there someone watching us?
maybe they're clones. They're at home.
Alien clones.
They're at home reading.
Oh, there we go.
Wow.
Well, book for us.
It's wonderful, wonderful. I want to thank all of you for being in here. And, you know, Deb, I want to thank you so much. Mention your company again.
Urban Artist Florida Studio.
And people can contact you and get a wonderful book cover that you've done. Exactly. You've done a wonderful one for Kate Brunson. And Rhea Burton, I want to thank you for being here. And I know you're so busy with the little one. And he is absolutely...
Oh, thank you.
He's a dolly.
He's a darling. And for anyone who wants to check out my books, I'm at BriaBurton.com.
Right. Exactly. She's funny. You have to listen to her. Oh, I forgot the doggy thing. And Kathy, there's so much. I have to have you back soon.
Okay. Are you going to talk about the recording I did?
Yeah,
I narrated.
Beautiful.
I literally started a podcast.
Oh, it's beautiful.
And
it's so funny.
It's brand new, so there's not much to say yet.
Absolutely wonderful.
I want to mention. We'll come back. Okay. I'll talk.
You have to come back.
Can I mention
quickly. KateBronson.com for Clone Droid, the new wave. And also, we're going to be doing book signings and selling books at Gulfport on Saturday night.
Oh,
and 321 Bookstore, Tyrone Mall, on December 9th. I'll be there to sign books.
Okay,
yes.
Good.
Kate and I will be in Gulfport this Saturday, 6 o'clock.
Okay, in Gulfport on Saturday. Perfect. Okay, so everybody, remember, one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or to hear them spoken in an audible book. I have to say this very fast. Or to hear those magic words, lights, camera, action, and your book will be turned into a streaming video, a major motion picture, or maybe a series on television. And say something nice to somebody today. I have to say something nice to Big Ed in the control room very fast. He's saluting me. I'm saluting him. He's looking at the clock. And it's a tick-tock, because that's exactly what Kate Brunson has at the beginning of her book, this TikTok, this countdown, it's really exciting. It's a thriller, I'm telling you. Clone Droid is a thriller. You have to read it. It's wonderful. Anyway, thank you all for being in.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Patsy.
Okay, bye-bye now.